lot of our comments are going to be addressed in a lot more detail in some of the later talks, both by Northwest Science Center presenters and also by some of the other talks that are scheduled. So this, like the other two, is just a set of highlights in some way. So I guess what are our general comments, like both of the previous two presenters, we were overall really impressed with the report. Rob did a good job of summarizing a lot of complex scientific issues, and particularly considering the really large publication group. So in terms of kind of substantive comments, I'll just go through by section. So in section two, we had some comments touching on kind of methods of including FSC on predators, particularly pinheads and yard statistical regression analysis. Erica done some analyses on that that we regretted, I think. And so we kind of told the panel to please ignore those. We have quite a few comments on this kind of causation correlation issue. We don't really disagree a lot with what the panel said, just there's some more nuance that we put in there. We have some comments on measuring aspects of measuring nutritional stress, and then a few comments on alternative mechanisms other than prey switching by which the whales might respond to a lot of prey. Let's go through those just a little bit. In terms of including other salmon predators, this was something that the panel thought was very important. We agree that exploring that is really important. We have a lot of concerns about kind of what are the most appropriate data and the abundance that you want to use as a covariate in those statistic regression analyses, and some concerns about some particular time series there. And then we also think it's really important, in addition to a little bit echoing the Alaskan comments with regard to the whales, I think with regard to pinnipeds, you also need really look at kind of what would be the mechanism by which pinnipeds and whales would compete, focusing on locations of predation, age, this kind of issue of generalist versus specialist predators. And I think all this will be discussed in the section. In terms of this interpretation of correlation with salmon and whales, there's going to be an entire session on that. So the report kind of basically made the point that correlation is not proof causation. There could be a third factor driving both salmon and the whales, and some suggestions to look at what some of those other third factors might be, indices of ocean productivity and so forth. Then they also mentioned the apparent lack of density dependence is kind of weakening the idea of a mechanism by which prey would be an important thing. It's kind of hard to disagree with all that in some sense. On the other hand, there's certainly evidence pointing towards a potential causation as well. The Chinook abundance, Chinook was not just chosen out of thin air to choose some sort of regression or a major bright item. As far as we know, there hasn't been a third factor identified or even really hypothesized that would cause Chinook and the whales to go vary. So I'm interested to discuss if there are potential factors that cause that. One thing we noted was that actually Eric Ward in a prior analysis published paper did actually look at a very large number of factors, most of which are correlation with whales. In terms of ocean conditions, we kind of pushed back a little bit against that, mostly because we felt like it kind of got us further away from the mechanism. It's certainly possible to get a correlation with ocean conditions, but to the degree that I think that's mediated by the prey, we're not quite sure what how we would do that. And then finally, we'll note that the southern resident and northern resident populations by themselves quite correlated, and they don't disperse between the two populations in terms of gene-flow migration. And so that fact seems to be an important thing to consider when evaluating that. The panel talked a lot about the importance of direct measures of nutritional stress or condition of the whales, and largely in the context of perhaps providing more sensitive indicators of nutrition than these kind of crude indicators of survival or fecundity. And we agree with that. It seems like that's an important thing to do. They talked a lot about the aerial photogrammetry work, which we agree is also really important. But we think that this whole topic could use maybe a little more context and sort of some more discussion of various methods of measuring nutritional status and whales and how that information would be used either within season or among Let's see, there's a lot of discussion about the winter. We just heard more discussion about the winter diet and kind of lack of information. And because there's a lack of information in some cases, it kind of leads to speculation on what might be going on. And one obvious speculation is that they're switching to prey, which is certainly reasonable. But we just wanted to mention that there was other potential mechanisms of responding to a locally low abundance of preferred prey. And one important one is movement. And one thing we think was maybe a little bit underemphasized in the report is just the sort of ability of whales to move. And there are data, this is a slide taken from presentations in the last workshop based on acoustic recorder data that show inferred movement patterns of whales. Days here going from January to middle of the spring. And so the whales move around a lot, and they can certainly, in addition to switching prey, they can simply elsewhere in search of their preferred prey. Here's another figure from the presentation on the first workshop. In the first workshop, again, kind of showing using a variety of different data sources, so sighting data, acoustic data, and so forth, tracking kind of individual whales and studying over about a 5-week period, doing a pretty large swath of ground. So I think it's important to keep in mind. We have very few comments on section 3. In terms of section 4, feeding habits and energetic needs, we have most of the comments, but we'll just kind of echo some of the other comments that have come up here. And we need to be very precise in our definitions of season and so forth. And probably in some places, perhaps report, perhaps also reflecting some of the discussion presentations. But the workshop got a little loose with what they meant by winter and summer and so forth. And so I think we need to guide basically for your previous comments. We need to be very precise about that. In terms of diet, we thought it would be worth kind of just reviewing all of the diet information again, and I'll be doing that in a presentation later this morning, because we kind of felt like there was maybe an underemphasis of some of the diet information available. So, for example, in the winter, it's true that there's not a lot of information available, but there are more than two samples that have and we actually have some new data on diet based on both next generation sequencing of fecal samples. And so I'll be talking about that. And then also San Diego later this morning we'll be talking about new data based on stable isotope ratios. Let's see. In terms of section 5, fisheries is great availability. We have some same comments that have been made both by the previous two speakers, which is we thought that perhaps in some places the report made some maybe overly simple assumptions about seasonal distribution. So we just kind of wanted to emphasize a couple things, and this will come up in a later talk, that there are some data on the whale distribution. There's not a lot, but there's more than we thought perhaps was mentioned in the report. And then the other point I think is really important is that the whales, or at least a portion of them, spend a significant amount of time in coastal waters in all seasons, including the summer. So it's really sort of state to include, for example, that prey genetic data of samples taken in the South Sea during the summer are the only things that can be eaten during that time period because they do spend a significant amount of time on the as well. And then finally, this issue of seasonal overlap of whales and Chinook stocks. Again, I think it's very important to be clear on what you mean by summer and winter and spring and fall. And we kind of think there's a little more data available to take a careful look at what Chinook stocks the whales are overlapping with when, and we'll be talking about that more in the presentation. We didn't have a lot of comments on 6, other than just to be kind of careful about all the various flavors of lambda that are calculated, and the fact that not all of them are directly related to the published article. And it's just, in that case, it's just sort of a case of finding apples and oranges. We did appreciate a lot of the comments on the recovery goal itself and so forth, and that provided a lot of interesting things. Finally, there was some mention in the report that perhaps the population has always been rare, or that there was evidence to maybe conclude that the population has always been rare. And that certainly could be true. The population has always been rare. We really know. But there's also some evidence to suggest that it could have been quite larger. I think at this point, sort of open question as to what the population size was historically. those later in the end. And thanks again. That's something we've been pondering as well. Is you would expect that if Ray was looking, you might see stronger evidence against the independence. But I think you can envision mechanisms by which perhaps the catchability of salmon related to density is sort of more of a physiological problem of finding salmon as opposed to actual absence of salmon abundance.
But the classical mechanism that affects on population dynamics are mediated by the per capita rate of consumption of food would indicate that either changes in food supply or changes in animal abundance should affect population dynamics. And if you don't see any effect of changes in animal abundance,
they talking in another discussion of the era of photography. The panel suggested that you could use the era of photography to monitor the condition of the whales over years and perhaps even within a year. And that'd be great. And what we were asking, I guess what would be good to hear from John as well as Micah, is whether the precision of the technique is sufficient to allow that. So, and then I guess our other concern is just that there may be other methods of monitoring condition that weren't mentioned by the panel. And just thought it'd be important to mention. The implication was that our only method available for condition. And if that's true, great, but if there are other methods, it would be important to mention. I'm hoping that that will come up later, but our concern there was that there's a lot of holes in the Pinfit time series, and in particular some of the data sets in for the present. So I'm not really sure. I know that Eric has some ideas on that.
Yeah, about the exact time series.
Well, or what data should be used to assess the relationship.
So I think that we can use some of the existing time series. I just don't think it's really appropriate to use them in the logistic regression analyses I have been using in the past. So I think there's some other approaches, some multivariate dot regressive state space models that I've been doing a lot of work with. You can have gaps in time series, missing values are totally fine because you're integrating over what those states are going to be, and that we're not doing that really with the logistic. So I propose changing the framework rather than really looking at the data.
I was a bit unclear about the point about the movement. You were stating that they move a lot, but what are you asking with respect to the movement?
We were just mentioning it at one point, I can't give you the exact line number, report kind of talked about how, if they're measuring it around, it would be logical that they use the spaces and these species. And of course, there's some evidence that they do that in the case of Trump. We were just making the point that there may be other things, any other information that they might do. And one thing they might do is just move around in search of Trump.
Yeah.
I guess I would just like to suggest that lumping all the pods together might be problematic, because obviously there are different strategies for different pods. So if we're trying to look for a signal, obviously JPOD is a very different strategy than KNL, as well as the interannual variability is such that lumping all the years together might be problematic in terms of trying to find trends. So I think that this past year was a particularly, there was a lot of time away area, and that's different than other years. So I'm trying to understand causation. I think we have to do something other than summing and averaging.
Is there a question there?
Other questions or comments?
Yes.
Getting back to the density dependence, Peter Alessia calculated population growth as a generalized logistic and found a very large shape parameter. And an implication of that is that most of the time the population will grow at its intrinsic rate of increase, and then when it gets very close to carrying capacity, you'll start to see density dependent effects. And once it's very quickly adjusted carrying capacity, and then the population should stay relatively constant. And I'm wondering why Peter's work doesn't seem to be more thoroughly considered in the evaluation of the process here.
Is this a question for me or for the panel?
Well, I guess both. You're kind of feeling that there's not evidence for density dependence, but the way you try to demonstrate that experimentally is you do a pulse fishing event. Is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has referred to the capture operations. So you drive the population below its kind of steady state level, and then you watch it recover, and that kind of gives you an intrinsic rate of increase, and then it kind of gets back up in the neighborhood of where it was before, and the population should level out. And we kind of got a chance to see that happening in northern and southern residents. And I'm wondering why that's not being taken as evidence of density dependence.
I throw that straight at Eric, or it's like John wants to say something.
Other questions?
Hey, Eric. Eric, can I just... You might want to address my comment at the same time of day as Dave's. I just wanted to clarify Dave's point, which I agree with. We know a lot about southern residents and individuals, so because of that, the models that Eric and others have got very complicated, and parameterization is quite difficult. So, we're trying to throw in a lot of parameters and tease apart its dependence. But with other marine mammals, particularly cetaceans where we don't know much about, our classic methods for looking at density dependence and assessment models are exactly like Dave says. You fit an exponential model, you fit a logistic model, and you see which one fits best. And under legislation like the MMPA, we would conclude the density dependence by doing that in these populations, by fitting simple models. So we've got to be a bit careful that we're not getting too complicated and over-parameterizing here. So I'm just backing up Dave's point a little bit. Gray whales are a classic example. We have abundant time series. We fit models that show this a density-dependent parameter. We conclude density dependence and be listed.
Okay, I can try to address those both as well. I think, the point that both you and Dave brought up were good. I think, there's kind of a gradient from the models that Peter Lessig used where there's single-stage models where you're lumping all sexes and ages in the same model and kind of looking at total populations by the same time. And then there's models like Antonio and I have been using where we're using stage structure models. And I think comparing the southern residents and northern residents, it really doesn't matter if you use a single-stage model or an age-structured model. I think, as I showed in workshop two, there's a lot more support for density dependence in the northern population, because we've seen essentially a doubling of the population over the last 30, 40 years, doubling of the females. So there's a lot more resolution versus the southern residents, where the population is essentially flat. You can't really detect that density dependence or estimate that density dependence parameter pretty well. So I think it's just a contrast between those two populations. It really doesn't matter what approach you use, but you're going to find different evidence.
Just from a statistical perspective, if we had trend in abundance prior to the aquarium trade, and we could assert that that would, they were, we had a carrying capacity, then we would have very strong evidence for it. But we, you know, essentially, we don't have a time series before the aquarium trade, and that reduces the power of the ability to detect density dependence quite a bit.
Other comments?